Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Haley Bird Wilt.
And Grace Seegers could not be with us for this episode, but we do have a special guest. And Haley, I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce him.
My friend Chris Estep is joining us. I'm very excited to have Chris on the Hoth Takes podcast. He is, first and foremost, not really though, a 90s kid who played a lot of Star Wars video games, which will be of interest to our listeners today. A longtime Hoth Takes listener, first time caller. I met him after he inherited my husband's spot in a Capitol Hill row house almost a decade ago. He met me while I was reading a book in a corner at a Super Bowl party, which I think a year or so ago, Chris very much humbled me by telling me of this and saying that it was his first time like coming to the realization that you can meet someone that you think is cool from online in real life and discover that they're not cool at all. So he always speaks truthfully. So I'm excited to chat with him today. He also works on policy stuff. He's been in the government in and out. He perhaps will be in the government again sometime. Who knows?
Awesome. Well, Chris, welcome to Hoth Takes.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Haley. Like Haley said, longtime listener, first time caller. So great to be hanging out with you all to talk all things Star Wars. And obviously, any bad takes that I have today are just purely mine and mine alone and my responsibility. So thanks for having me.
Thank you for that disclaimer. So as Haley mentioned, we are talking today about Star Wars video games. And part of that is we've talked about movies and TV a lot on this show. That's kind of our bailiwick for the most part. But we did want to touch on games because I'm not a huge gamer. Haley, I'd love to hear about your history with games. But this isn't really something that we've made core to the show. But it's an important part of the franchise. Some of the most interesting storytelling has involved the video games. And it's certainly a way that a lot of people connect to Star Wars through the games, even if they're not quote-unquote big Star Wars fans. So we thought we would talk a little bit about what would it take to make us Star Wars gamers. So we're each going to pitch for you, the listener, one idea, one or more ideas for the game that would bring us into the video gaming fold and have us playing a game every single day. What would that game look like? And then we'll try to unpack those a little bit and understand what makes those games so special to us or those game ideas so special to us. But first, I thought we could talk a little bit about our history with Star Wars video games, because like I said, Haley, I'm not really sure if you have a history with these games. When have you played any of the games that have been out there over the decades?
I have. It's slightly embarrassing. The first one, of course, was Lego Star Wars. I spent a lot of time in Dexter's Diner in Lego Star Wars. I don't think I understood how to play video games around that time. I was a small child, so it's not like I like succeeded in winning the game, but I like moved my character around a lot. After my brother got an Xbox for Christmas, I spent a lot of time playing video games to the extent that it was that year, that Christmas was the first Christmas that we had a real Christmas tree in our house. And it was like the smell of a Christmas tree to this day. Like we had a real one this year and I just had this urge to play Black Ops, like almost Pavlovian response to the Christmas tree smell because of the, like this memory of spending way too many hours in the living room next to that tree playing the new Xbox after Christmas. So I thought I was very much a gamer in middle school. That was around the time we got the Xbox. And later on we played Battlefront a lot. And to my shame, I got really good at Battlefront. Like I think the thing I enjoyed the most about Battlefront is, yes, you could explore the Star Wars worlds, but the style of combat in Star Wars, the films, and also in this video game, it's very conducive to a very good like hallway battle where there's bad guys on one side and you're on the other side and you're like slowly advancing through the hallway. And that was my specialty. I was very good at like peeking in and out from the hallways and like shooting the opposing team in Battlefront. So I don't know. I had lots of fun playing that game. I don't know which. I know there's a number that goes at the end of Battlefront. I don't know which one I was playing. I have no idea. There was Hoth. I feel like I got to play on Endor. there were other worlds. I don't know. There was like a, the, like, you know, where it's online, like multiplayer kind of teams fighting each other games. Yeah, that's most of my, that's the extent of my Star Wars video gaming. I have heard tell from my friends in the marching band in high school that Knights of the Old Republic is where it's at, but I've never played that.
Yeah, I too am not a Knights of the Old Republic person, although I'm sure I would have fun with it. For me, Star Wars video games have mostly been about the story. Like I mentioned before, they've been giving the single player games some really interesting stories, particularly recently in the Disney canon era. They've used the Battlefront games, the remakes of the Battlefront games, to talk about the era of sort of the fall of the Empire and the rise of the New Republic, that time period, which hasn't gotten a lot of storytelling, or at least had not back then. So I have been playing, I would say, almost all of the Disney games that have come out that have a single-player story mode. I've been doing that mostly just to see the story and experience the story. But then, yeah, back in the day with the original, the OG Battlefront games, I was definitely playing the like online battle royale, you know, with people over the internet, and those were my jam. The Battlefront games were incredible. I still remember, you know, you could go on Reddit and see all the memes of like the little audio clips of the clone troopers like telling you to watch out for different threats and stuff. So those have been indelibly scarred into my brain. But yeah, I did. I played the Battlefront games. I'm sure I did a Lego Star Wars here and there. I know that I had a joystick, and so I did play one of the X-Wing or TIE Fighter games. I was not very good at that. I have a joystick around here somewhere now, so because there was a recent game where it was a similar concept. I forget what it's called. We don't have it in our show notes, but it was another Starfighter type video game, and so I bought another joystick for that and barely used it. But I've always been more into the story that they tell through these games, and they haven't all had stories, so I haven't played a lot of those. But even some of the ones that did have stories, I mean, Knights of the Old Republic, that's a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, MMORPG, and I didn't play that. I think I wasn't interested in games too much when it came out. But, you know, I played Republic Commando. That's another really popular one. I do distinctly remember when I was working a summer job doing IT at my high school, on our lunch breaks, we would network the computers together and do a Jedi Knight multiplayer game. And I don't know how many people were involved, but it was a solid group of us who were sort of doing tech work there over the summer. And Jedi Knight and the Dark Forces games are also kind of OG classic Star Wars games, and that multiplayer experience was a lot of fun as well. So there's a real diversity of these games, but there are some that we haven't even gotten into. I mean, there's a lot of types of games out there beyond the kind of traditional shooter games or MMO games that we've been talking about. So Chris, I would love to hear what your experience has been, because I understand that you have done quite a number of them.
Well, Eric, that summer in high school sounds like a great summer for energy prices, I'll just say. But I'm sure nobody in the town noticed the utility bill. But no, I think it's great to hear you all talking about some of the games that you all played in the Star Wars universe growing up, because candidly, those just weren't games that I was playing as a kid. To Haley's point earlier, I had the chance to play through the Star Wars kind of Lego collaboration, which, you know, if you were a kid who was born in the mid 90s, growing up in the 2000s, to have Star Wars as a brand sort of sitting at the intersection of Lego products, Lego video game products, and then the movies and the TV shows. I mean, that was just like the absolute sweet zone if you were like an 8 or 9 year old kid in the mid 2000s, which I was. So I spent a lot of time playing Lego Star Wars on my Nintendo SP, which was a variation of the Game Boy, obviously, and GameCube. True heads will know. And Eric, to what you were saying earlier about kind of the importance of these video games in helping flesh out unexplored elements of the Star Wars universe that the movies and the TV shows don't get into, I think the Lego Star Wars video game is an interesting kind of contribution in the mix, because what you're essentially doing, and the same thing happens in the Lego Harry Potter video game, you are essentially replaying the exact same story that plays out on the movie screen. And so you're not necessarily adding new texture or new background elements to the story that you've already seen in the movie. You're actually just participating more actively in a story that you've already watched as a game playing character. And I think for obviously for your like 8, 9, 10-year-old video game players, I think that's just a way more accessible experience for folks like that. I would be remiss though if I didn't acknowledge that there aren't just the video games that you would experience on your own personal console or on your own personal computer, but there was obviously a whole, you know, there's probably a whole graveyard of Star Wars arcade games that we can't even begin to list here. For me, growing up in Florida in the mid-2000s at downtown Disney, there was an arcade where you could play essentially a version of the pod racing game in Star Wars Episode One, where essentially it was like in a typical arcade where you could ride like a car or a motorcycle attached to a screen. These engineers had created a literal pod racer that you would kind of control with your hands, like reaching out to those levers. And like, who knows how many like pieces of Trident layers were stuck to the bottom of those things. but it was also like an important way that kids my age experienced the world of Star Wars games.
Wait, you got to climb into a pod racer? Like it was like a full-on, they had built a pod racer for you to to climb into?
That's right. So there were, it would, the at least from what I remember from, I think probably every third grade birthday party in the Orlando area at a certain time in history was probably at downtown Disney. And essentially, you know, imagine, you know, you're familiar with like the arcades where there's essentially like a plastic motorcycle or a plastic car that's attached to a screen and you control the vehicle. This was that, but with a pod racer, right? With an open top. But two of those levers on either side that you would kind of reach out and use to sort of to brake or to accelerate, almost like a really intense version of Mario Kart.
Was it hard to maneuver the pod racer? Like, was it accurate to the film? Because they look very difficult to drive.
I mean, I think it would be difficult for anybody, but especially if you were like a very uncoordinated 9-year-old, I think it would be up at the tippy top of like hard things to do. But, again, I think just another great example of all of the ways that we experience these games growing up, and another example of just the fact that there are probably so many Star Wars games out there that were built by all of these developers, many of which are probably like lost to history or at least lost to like Reddit lore, basically.
Well, you know, the Pod Racer arcade game is not lost, because if you go on eBay right now, I just looked this up, you can buy one of those for about $6,000. So
Chris,
everybody here wants to get in on that,
you can do that.
It's
Chris.
Pre-owned.
Yeah, we need maybe in a supplemental package through Congress or something, we can build up the national stockpile of former arcade games.
You know, we've mostly been talking about computer games, although you mentioned some mobile games as well, but there's also the home console market, which was huge, and we didn't even talk about Shadows of the Empire, one of the early multimedia projects that where they would do a book and a comic, but it was all built around the video game, which was kind of the first time, this was in 1996, the first time we were seeing in between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So this is the sort of, folks will maybe remember Dash Rendar, you know, the smuggler character, and you know, you're seeing the underworld, the crime syndicates, a lot of the storytelling that was later paid off in you know, the Crimson Dawn, you know, Kira from the Solo movie, like that whole underworld vibe really started with Shadows of the Empire, and that was for the Nintendo 64. And I actually had that and several other N64 games. There was a Battle of Naboo from Episode One. There was another kind of, there's a Rogue Squadron game where you're flying, you know, the snow speeders around in between the AT-ATs on Hoth. There was all kinds of stuff that was happening on the consoles even at that time, and the graphics were, you know, today they would be very silly looking, but that was cutting edge for the time and a big part of how people connected to that universe, because again, a lot of those games came out in the early 90s and the mid 90s before Phantom Menace and long after the original trilogy. So that was along with books like Heir to the Empire from Timothy Zahn, that was kind of how the franchise stayed alive. And I think one of the big themes, certainly of the Disney era, is people being very disappointed that Disney has not really sort of lived up to the potential to bring back that exciting, viral Star Wars video game feel. There have been popular games, you know, the Jedi Fallen Order is one example, but they haven't kind of recaptured the magic of the Shadows of the Empire, or certainly, you know, KOTOR, right? I mean, that's a sensation beyond even Star Wars. So I think that's kind of the moment we find ourselves in right now, where there aren't a lot of top-tier viral sensation Star Wars video games that even your non-Star Wars fans are going to be playing. And that kind of brings us to, you know, what I wanted to talk about today, which is what do we want to see from Star Wars games? What is our pitch for the one big title to rule them all that is going to bring Star Wars gaming back with a vengeance? So, Chris, you know, you talked a little bit about the games you have played. If you were to, you know, you're going to give us your pitch in a moment, but generally speaking, what kinds of video games appeal to you even beyond Star Wars? Like, what gets you to play a game, if anything?
Sure. And as you were talking, Eric, it just had me thinking about how essentially the world of Star Wars video games kind of breaks down into the category of fighting games and racing games. And maybe there's a little bit of a Venn diagram that intersects the two of those. But really, like, two kind of broad categories of game that we could use to, like, sort that entire body of work. But I think in my own time, obviously, if I've got a couple spare hours, to be honest, I'm probably spending time playing Civ, particularly Civ 5. My friends in college introduced me to that game. Love the strategy elements there. But I think, like most people, I'm not exactly having a lot of time to play video games on my computer. Or I do have a Nintendo Switch that I maybe somewhat embarrassingly bought with COVID stimulus money. That was my contribution to the economic rebound.
Chris Lord.
I remember this too. this was very controversial in my house at the time, but I did
Were
that
you
primarily
still living
to play
in the estate.
I was living on the hill.
Was this in the grilled cheese era? That's my question, because I feel like you were making a Friday grilled cheese. Eric, Chris, on Fridays during the beginning of the pandemic, would make the most, like, gourmet grilled cheeses you've ever seen in your life. And I'm pretty sure on a grilled cheese visit in the backyard while we were social distancing and eating our cheeses, I think you showed me your Switch that you got.
I was so proud of it. The thing about living in a group house with a bunch of housemates in the middle of a pandemic is you've got to have something to keep the peace. And so I had decided early on that if on every Friday night I was making a new grilled cheese recipe for my housemates, that would excuse, like, whatever week's worth of accumulated grievances had picked up by living in such close proximity with these guys. But no, it was the Nintendo Switch that really carried me through. And I primarily did that to play Mario Kart, right? Obvious connects with the racing traditions of Star Wars. But I think today, like post-pandemic, lots of folks aren't playing on Switches or playing on their laptops. They're spending a lot of time on their phones, playing video games on their phones and using other apps. And so I think my pitch, this is also, I think, given rise to what some people call idle games. It's the idea that you can sort of manage the world of gameplay on the app and then leave it for several hours and then come back to it later to find certain, like, progress has been made in the game even while you've been away. I think the idea there is so that you don't have to spend a long time sitting down playing the game, but I do think the sum total throughout the day probably means that you're spending more time overall on the screen. But I think a great example of this genre is a game called Egg Incorporated, where you can essentially run, like, an egg farm and, you know, buy more chickens and build more eggs in that process. And then you can step away from your phone for hours. So I think my pitch in sort of that new world of video game consumption would be built around your stereotypical traditional Star Wars bar cantina locale. You could call it, you know, Cantina Tycoon. And the idea behind the game is that, you know, you're a you're maybe on Tatooine or you're on Coruscant, or maybe you're starting on Tatooine and you're trying to get to Coruscant. And you can be the proprietor of a local establishment, maybe of disrepute, right? Because it is Star Wars on Tatooine. And you're essentially making improvements or upgrades to your restaurant or to your bar. You're dealing with customers. Maybe you're putting off some unwanted advances from the Hutt crime family. And over time, you're accumulating the revenue to grow your cantina empire in the world of Star Wars. I like that idea in part because it's a little bit of a break from the fighting and the racing games that we've been talking about.
I love that idea because the biggest experience that I've had with any gaming recently is I'm doing Duolingo, and when you're on the ad-supported Duolingo, the ads that you get are often for these kinds of idle games, and you know, while you're waiting to skip the ad, it makes you sit there for 30 seconds, and so you kind of either have to play it or just ignore your screen. And so I've definitely found myself doing, you know, the sort of 30-second test outs of these games. One of them is like, you're a woman who's running a farm and you got to collect the eggs and then bring them over to the conveyor belt. There's one where you're a king and you got to build these towers and, you know, shoot at the barbarians who are approaching you, and then you collect their coins and stuff. And this is, honest to goodness, the most experience I've had with gaming recently, because it's just almost every day, you know, you're getting, you know, these or other similar ads. And what can you do but just move around almost aimlessly, mindlessly, waiting for the ad to be skippable and collecting the eggs and building the towers? It is kind of addictive. I understand why these games are so successful, because there's an element of just it requires just enough of your attention that you're doing something, but not so much that you really have to focus on it. You can kind of look away and look back, and it doesn't take too much effort. And so I think that is a really compelling space for a Star Wars game that plays to the kind of the lighthearted side of the galaxy. And as you said, it also takes us away from what most of these games have been about, perhaps makes it a little more accessible to younger audiences, people who shouldn't be playing first-person shooters, that kind of thing. So I really like that idea, Chris. And I'm assuming that we would have a cameo from Dexter Jester himself if this really is going to be a bar, restaurant, or cantina themed game.
That's right. I think there's an idea there as you're sort of upgrading through the levels, maybe, that you start in a place like Tatooine, very desolate, not a ton of customers, a lot of danger. Maybe you upgrade to Dexter's Diner. You serve some Jawa juice there. I think that's the term that the robot uses in episode 2. Or the droid, and then maybe the sort of the culminating bar that you get to operate is the one in Attack of the Clones, where the bounty hunter gets their arm severed by the lightsaber, famously.
Oh yeah, that was like an upscale Coruscant nightclub where Obi-Wan and Anakin chase down the bounty hunter. So yeah, that's a good culmination level.
Jedi business, go back to your drinks.
Haley, what do you think? Would you play that game?
I love the idea. I don't play games very much now because I have small little children and I don't want them to be as addicted to screens as I was growing up. Because, as I said, I did play a lot of video games at a certain time in my life. And I don't know if it was necessarily good for me. It was fun though. So, yes, I'm not sure if I would. I feel this like sense of guilt whenever my kid is in the room and they like want like necessities of life, like food and water from me. And I'm like looking at my emails. So
it's important to keep them fed and watered from what I understand.
Stop, honey. Mommy's monitoring the situation. So I want to move away from that kind of lifestyle in which I'm looking at my little screen. So I don't know if I would. I don't know if my game that I would pitch would be a phone game, even though I think it's good for certain people in certain periods of their life to have that kind of like activity available to them. So I'm not saying your game should not exist, Chris. I'm just saying it's not for me at this point in my life. But I do think, and this is not creative at all, but I do think the future we were promised is a future in which there's holographic things like floating up in from the technology, and like the game that Chewie is playing on the ship where he's like controlling the little monsters and they're like fighting each other. Do we know what that game is called? Because I think at this point in society, we should be able to manufacture that little, like, a base of a, like, monster chess Star Wars game for people to play in real life.
So, Haley, I was literally trying to look this up before we recorded today, and I believe that the game is called Djarik.
I'm sure there's, like, analog versions of it, like a Djarik chessboard you can buy. I'm certain that exists.
I do have to say, when I went on the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, in the lounge area, they have two holochess tables that you could play. And they do use these, like, kind of cool effects to make it look holographic. Obviously, the hotel is closed, so I would love to know, if you work at Disney Parks, what happened to those holochess tables. But yes, there's photos of me playing the holochess game, and I will say I did pretty well for myself, and it's not hard to learn. And yes, it was cool. Obviously, not actual holograms, so it's not the same thing, but it was as close, I think, as they can get with, like, standard commercial technology today, and it was pretty fun.
I see that I've done a Google search, and I see there's tons of versions of this with, like, little plastic figures. I just think we need to, like, make a societal leap forward to the point where it looks like it did in the movie. That's my opinion.
So you're pushing for technology that will allow us to display holograms, but not for, like, life-saving medical purposes or, like, solving wars, just
sometimes
so that we can have
the... Sometimes they come together, Eric. Sometimes they discover something good for society and it enables something like a holo chess set.
I will say this is probably Haley's version of the Apollo mission, right? We need to build the technology so that Haley can play Djarik wherever she goes. And if some of the attendant benefits of that or some of the technology dividends of that bring improved health outcomes for people, that's, you know, that's a price she's willing to pay for everybody.
Yeah, it's a spin-off technology.
That's right.
I like the idea because it's a game you can play with a real person in a room, even though it's technically a video-ish kind of game because there's holograms. You're playing it in community. You're not just looking at a screen the whole time. Like, and maybe there's an option, since it will be holograms in this universe where we're technologically advanced, like, maybe that you can, like, do multi, like, online gameplay with someone else. That seems easy to do. But I, like, in my dream world, like, your mom comes over for tea and you're like, let's do a Djarik match real quick.
No, I think the way this is going to show up in Haley's life, though, is she's going to become one of those like public park or public fountain chess players, except she'll have the Djarik in front of her.
Yes.
I gotta ask Eric, though. I mean, in Star Wars Episode 4, I think it is, where they play this game, a couple of those holo characters, like, kind of kill each other in pretty brutal and violent ways. Eric, when you were playing your version of this at the hotel, what was it like? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how badly would it traumatize Haley's kids?
So I do have to admit that I got this wrong, and it was not the holo chess. It was a holographic. It was a holographic, like, table thing, but it was Sabacc, the card game that they play in Star Wars. It was not the chess game with the pieces that move around and grab each other and throw them to the ground. That might have been a little too violent for Disney. So I do have to issue a correction there. It was not Djarik, it was Sabacc. Still very fun and did have holographic elements, but it was, I'm sorry to let you down. I think the Djarik would have been a little too violent because there were a lot of kids there as well. But yeah, I mean, I still think that we need this kind of table, and maybe you can, like, sort of set age controls on it, where if you're like 10 and you're playing, the monsters don't kill each other. They just kind of, like, pick each other up and gently move them aside and, like, take their space, you know, like a softened edge version of this kind of brutality chess that they're playing in Star Wars. But yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. And I know that you wanted to bring up some other examples of games that could, kind of similar to what Haley was saying, kind of blend what we see in Star Wars of their gaming and, you know, what we could do in the real world.
Sure. Well, I think that's part of why I love Haley's idea so much, is because it also illustrates that even within, there are obviously games about Star Wars, and then there are games within Star Wars and within that universe, to include, obviously, Djarik, which is the holochess game that we've been talking about, Sabacc, which is the card game that Eric just described. I guess it's kind of a version of a card game, but maybe a little bit of a precursor to like Kalshi or Polymarket, where there are plenty of characters in Star Wars who have debts and associated with all of their gambling in this game. But then also, folks might recall that there are some like glancing shots in Attack of the Clones when Anakin and Obi-Wan go into that upscale Coruscant bar that we've been talking about. And there are televisions, essentially screens behind them that are depicting gameplay that folks are gambling around. And one of those is also a... It looks like a football game that's being played by droids. So I think you could also, to draw from Haley's original example, you could also imagine like a Madden-style game that draws on the game that you see in episode 2. So I think there's a lot to play with there, and that's why I think Haley's idea is so cool.
And I like the idea of building a team much like in like the Madden games where you pick players based on their actual real world stats. You know, you could do a similar thing with droids, like, you know, this model of droid is really fast, but it doesn't have really strong armor, you know, something like that.
That's right. Yeah. The optionality of that, or like the customizability of that, I think also draws on, you know, another theme in Star Wars that folks are so, you know, familiar with or accustomed to, which is that folks are constantly tinkering. They're tinkering with their spaceships, they're tinkering with their lightsabers and their weapons, they're tinkering with their droids, and that modularity is so central to the world building of the show and the movies.
All right, so Haley, your pitch was Djarik, that's right?
Essentially. But now that we're talking about it, I'm thinking we need like a we also need a very like heavy narrative like video game based on the viewpoint of a like separatist droid who's trying to escape constant battle. I don't know. I feel like there's not enough prequel content. And you mentioned droids, Chris, and I'm like, that would be fun to be a droid.
I really like that. And actually, you might enjoy this, but the most recent game, I think it's the most recent game, Star Wars Outlaws, there is a former separatist assassin droid who's kind of the sidekick character. And his backstory, they did a book that kind of focuses on him and his first kind of partner. And his backstory is similar to what you described, where he used to be obviously a separatist droid, and then the war ends and he's kind of commandeered for another purpose. And you see things from his perspective, at least in this sort of prequel book, of wrestling with, you know, how autonomous he can be while his partner has like a restraining bolt. And, you know, there's this all this really interesting stuff about kind of autonomy for droids and things like that. So I think that there definitely is a space for that. And now that I think about Solo, they did have a whole subplot about L337 and kind of droid rights. So I think maybe we're ripe for a story that is even more centrally told from the perspective of a droid. And I'm always going to agree that we need more prequel content. So yeah, let's do a former separatist droid. What would be some of the obstacles that this character would have to overcome in this, particularly in this time period? Would this be during the war or as the war ends or what?
I haven't decided. Maybe the obstacle is just like you're constantly trying to take over the controls, but like you're being controlled by someone else as a droid. I don't really know the logistics of how the droids are controlled, but I assume there's some kind of like programming or something that would prevent a droid from changing his fate. So I don't know, like maybe you like are trying to be in charge and you're constantly like, I don't know, battling or like trying to like defeat some kind of like riddle or like math problem to like hack your own controls or something.
It sounds very philosophical.
It does. It doesn't sound fun now that I'm saying it. I also think it should be very silly. Like when you watch the Clone Wars, the droids are truly so silly and funny as like the background characters. Like probably half of the obstacles are your own comrades in arms who are always hurting themselves and hurting the droids around them on accident. So I don't know. There's probably enough foibles to draw from there.
Is your transmitter working?
I don't know. I haven't used it yet. All right, I'll check on it.
Stupid battle droids.
I think another way that you could think about it too is obviously in episode 2, when Count Dooku is convening some of those original separatist leaders, kind of like a little bit of like a motley crew of folks from different like military organizations, political organizations, trade organizations. I think it's clear that in the separatist movement, they don't always cohere together very effectively. There's not a lot of, like, to use a big military term, there's not a lot of interoperability between the various organizations. And so if in Haley's game, you have the opportunity to play potentially as multiple different droids that are a part of different organizations within that separatist ecosystem, maybe one of the elements of gameplay is that the controls for each droid are totally different. And so every time you're having to play, maybe one day you're a Trade Federation droid, and maybe the next day you're a Banking Clan droid, and the joysticks and the buttons are all doing completely different things in a way that captures the fragmented nature of the separatist movement, which is finally getting its due on Instagram Reels and in other content like that today.
Wait, tell us more about the Instagram Reels about.
So I don't know what Instagram has learned about me, but there was a brief time when I was being fed unironic propaganda supporting the Separatist Alliance in Star Wars that was pro-droid, pro-Dooku, and pretty critical of the Republic for its corruption, critical of Palpatine, critical of the Jedi. And it's just hilarious to me that there is, like, an entirely new subculture of pro-Separatist Alliance content on the internet. And I think Haley's game may not get, like, broad currency with the fan base, but I think she would have some pretty fired up folks from that subculture.
I'm now just, like, imagining Chris's, like, Google search history that got him those ads where it's, you know, he's searching Jedi bad, Jedi corrupt, separatist recruitment center near me, Palpatine lying.
That's
how Instagram finds him.
Eric, what about you? What's your pitch?
So, Chris, you mentioned Civilization a while ago, the classic turn-based strategy game where you explore the map and build cities and form trade relationships and sometimes conquer other civilizations to win the game. I love Civ. I gotta say, I'm a Civ 3 purist. I don't think it got any better after Civ 3. And I have played Civs 4 and 5. It's just not the same. So what I'd like to see is a Star Wars version of Civilization. They actually did one a number of years ago called Empire at War. They're, I think, only turn-based strategy game so far, certainly the only one that I can think of on the computer platform. And my thought is you would have a Star Wars game. It's like Civilization, and it would be set in the very early Republic. So the themes here we're talking are much like Civilization itself. You know, you start at sort of the dawn of recorded history, and then you progress through the eras up until, you know, you build the space shuttle at the end of the game, basically. So in my game, you're still having that theme of discovery, diplomacy, you know, meeting other civilizations, scientific advancement. You know, we could have the discovery of the hyperdrive at the end of the game. Obviously, there's going to be some conflict, but I think centering it on that earliest period of the Republic where it's not this galactic government yet, I would love to do a game where it's not like a canon single-player storytelling event where you actually see how the Republic became dominant, but you can sort of play out your own story of making the Republic the thing that we know it as in the prequel era. And again, just like Civilization, you know, you can have multiple kind of victory conditions. So maybe, you know, you need to conquer a corner of the galaxy. Maybe you need to bring a certain number of planets into your proto republic. Maybe you need to invent that key technology that totally changes the whole dynamic across the galaxy, like the hyperdrive, for example. You know, you can imagine a lot of goals that could be your victory conditions. But that's sort of my thought process. And much like Civilization, you choose who you want to play as. In this case, it's a little different because the early Republic is sort of the focus of the story. So the early Republic would have to be one of those civilizations. But I could also imagine that they would stock the game with other kind of unaffiliated civilizations that they would be making up for this game. And you can play as the Republic, or you can play as one of these other groups that is kind of out there watching this proto-Republic come together, perhaps a little bit warily. And, you know, just like in Civilization, you're competing for territory, You're competing for resources, and you're competing for to be the first to each of these technological achievements. And just like Civilization, everybody's got their strengths and everybody's got their weaknesses. So somebody is probably going to be better more at diplomacy. Someone might learn technology advancements more quickly. There's going to be some civilization that's, you know, they're the warlike species, so they're really good at combat. But it would be a fun way of kind of exploring what this period of the timeline was like. And again, we don't know basically anything about how the Republic came together. There's going to be a movie in the next few years about the Dawn of the Jedi, but we don't know how early on in the history of the Republic that takes place. It might even be long before the Republic. We don't know. So this particular era is really not explored at all. And you could even imagine maybe Lucasfilm someday takes elements from this game that we're talking about, like, you know, specific civilizations that are put in there or specific early technologies, and uses them in real sort of storytelling in the future, puts them in movies or books or whatever. And you can also imagine the reverse. Depending on when the game gets made, there we might have already learned something about this time period, and that stuff can be pulled into the game so that fans who are playing really feel like they have a connection to the material they've seen on the screen or in the books or whatever. But I think that we're ripe for a new turn-based strategy game. We've seen a lot of shooters recently, and there's an appeal to that, but there's a lot of people out there like me and seems like Chris as well, who really are itching for the Civilization experience, but with a unique Star Wars twist on it. So that's my pitch.
Yeah, it should come as no surprise, Eric. I love that idea. I think it's great in large part because, you know, Civ, like Star Wars, is ultimately all about trade and economics. And so I think that would be like the idea of a civilization adjacent Star Wars game really helps build out that universe in all of its different facets that go beyond just combat. I would be interested in hearing you sort of flesh out, you know, you mentioned obviously the role of technology development and improving technology and just how important that is to the gameplay experience in Civilization. How would you think about that in your Star Wars version of the game? And in particular, how would you think about the role of the Death Star? And would you intentionally orient the game such that the Death Star isn't the ultimate technological goal of gameplay?
So I would definitely have the sort of end stage of the game be long before the original trilogy era. I would kind of imagine the hyperdrive as being the end goal. The thing that kind of completely changes how people interact with each other is the ability to use the hyperdrive. Now, I'm just sort of spitballing here, so maybe in Lucasfilm's imagination of what the Star Wars timeline looks like, that's not a particularly late stage invention in the grand scheme of things. Maybe that's relatively early on in the history of the galaxy. I don't know, but that would be something like that. A neutral technology that's not like the Death Star is obviously, it's fully just militaristic. Like there's no sort of real peacetime application of that. I'm picturing the end state being a massive breakout technology that has all kinds of implications and uses, but isn't necessarily war coded, you know, because I think that this should be a fun game to play, even if you're not interested in taking the conquest route. That's something that Civ has always excelled at, is that you can definitely win by destroying the other civilizations. But much like in the real world, you know, there are a lot of people who really just want to win by generating soft power or establishing themselves as the most technologically dominant society. And I think the game needs to really orient toward that and not discourage combat, but I don't want everything to lead up to the Death Star, to answer your question. But that being said, you know, in the real world with Civilization, which is based on real history, it's easy for them to do a simple timeline of scientific discovery leading up to the modern era, where you have the space shuttle and you have there's stealth fighters in the game, right? Because that's kind of modern end of history, you know, everything that we're ever going to do until we get, you know, teleportation or whatever. Like, that's kind of the status quo of modern technology. With Star Wars, again, we don't know how Lucasfilm sees technological evolution playing out. And even if you think about how they use technology in the movies, there doesn't seem to be like a real internet. A lot of their technology is, you know, they have data pads, but those aren't really smartphones. So it's not totally clear to me what the progression of technology would look like, depending on how many thousands of years the game's supposed to cover. I'm not really sure that I could right now sketch out how the tech tree, which is the civilization term, how that would evolve. But I think it'll be really interesting to think about, like, what are the technologies that we see in Star Wars that we take for granted as Star Wars fans that had to have been invented at some point, and how would you organize those in order to make it a compelling game of, like, oh, I just invented, you know, speeders, right? Hover technology, right? That's something we think about all the time in Star Wars and totally take for granted. But I think that kind of thing would be really fun, particularly because a lot of it would be, by our real world standards, very futuristic. So, you know, treating those futuristic things as almost prehistoric inventions in a Star Wars context would kind of be like an interesting spin on Civilization, where everything in that game is, we've done it, and in many cases, like the written word and aqueducts, you know, we did it a long time ago. This game could be playing a little bit more with that idea of, like, old quote-unquote technology, but it's futuristic to us.
Yeah, I love that, and I love, like, sort of the world-building opportunity that you're describing there. And not just that, I also appreciate that it lends itself, because you're talking about technologies that aren't necessarily just devoted to combat, and because you're talking about a game that's structured around ways to prevail that aren't limited only to military victory. I think that's just all of that just sort of lends itself to some of the more complicated ethics and morality questions that more recent Star Wars properties have been trying to answer. And so I think for all those reasons, I think your idea would just really land. Haley, have you ever played Civilization before?
No, I was about to ask you why it's so wonderful to both of you. Is it on a computer? Can you tell me more? When I was a kid in high school, actually, they gave us iPads, which was not wise, because we would do silly things in Google Documents. Like, we would message each other in Google Docs where we were supposed to be writing essays and stuff. But we also had this app called, like, Plague Inc. I don't know if you ever played that one. Did you?
I played a version called Pandemic or Pandemic 2.
It might be the same thing. Maybe they changed the name. And it's like, it's it's morbid in hindsight. I don't know why we enjoyed this so much, but you were supposed to, like, manufacture the perfect virus to, like, wipe out the whole world. And you could watch in whole, like, real time while all the continents were, like, turning red with the, like, the virus that you had made. And you could choose, like, what kind of sickness it was going to be and, like, where to start it and how to start it. And, like, I feel like that's the closest I've gotten to Civ with, like, destroying civilization. Can you tell me what is Civ and why is it so wonderful?
First of all, I just have to say that sounds like a classic high school game and very wholesome. Every student should be playing it. But Chris, I'd love to hear you do a pitch for Civilization.
Of course, yeah. And I'll preface by saying that I'm a Civ 5 true believer. I've played no other version of Civ, so I'm not prepared to argue with Eric on his position in favor of Civ 3. But from my vantage point, I started playing Civ with one of my friends in college when I was in college. And Haley, if your goal is to set a good example to your kids about screen time, this is probably not the game for you or for them. Because, I mean, you could spend 6 hours playing this game in one sitting. Essentially, you start as essentially at you know, the beginning of recorded history. And you settle, you play on a map that is a series of, I think it's hexagonal tiles. And you can use a tile to place, you know, a settler or a worker or a part of the military. You can settle cities, and over time you can build a civilization with technologies, trade relationships with other civilizations, a military, scientific achievements, as Eric was just describing. And it's a turn-based strategy game. And you can vary the settings so that you can have more or less civilizations in the game. You can make the map bigger or smaller. You can make the gameplay faster or slower. But I think, and interested in Eric's thoughts on this as well, but I think the idea of the game is to present an idea of what it means to be a society, what it means to be a country that is very complex and multidimensional and isn't exclusively focused on military power, frankly, and talks about all of the other ways in which you can be a part of a thriving society and country. But Eric, I don't know if you have anything to add there.
I would just add that it's really the cool, one of the cool things is how it blends the very micro scale with the macro scale. So on the micro scale, yeah, you use resources to build new people basically in your civilization, and you can build workers and they can build roads and eventually railroads. You can build settlers who can walk around and build new cities. You build soldiers to protect those people. So that's micro. But at the macro scale, you know, it's a turn-based game. So when you end your turn, you watch as around you on the map, the other civilizations, they do their thing. They build a new city. They build a new road. And so you really have a sense of being in a community surrounded by other players, and you have to decide in any given moment, do you want to go to war with this society that looks like it can, you know, it can't defend itself? It has a strategic position maybe on a one of its cities is on the coast, so they can fish there. So do you want to try to conquer them? This other civilization is way more advanced than you technologically. Maybe you want to do a trade deal with them. Maybe you want to do like gold for silk or gold for, you know, technological knowledge. You know, you can get really granular with each other participant in the game, and it can be either people or computer players, about how do you want to interact with them. You can go have diplomatic meetings, and depending on how you've treated them in the past, they might be hostile to you, uninterested in doing a trade, or they might give you really generous terms if you've been very helpful to them over the course of the game. So frankly, it's really sophisticated in terms of how it uses your gameplay to change the disposition of the other computer-generated civilizations in the game. When you're playing with humans, that's a little more obvious, but when you're playing against a computer, it's really cool to watch how the other civilizations treat you differently depending on how you've behaved in the game. And, you know, they're real-world civilizations, right? So you might play as the U.S. and you're George Washington, and then you go meet with, like, Montezuma or, you know, Winston Churchill or whatever. And so there's, like, a kind of an element of, like, you know, lighthearted, you know, these are sort of caricature versions of these people, historical figures from these civilizations, but their gameplay is very nuanced and, again, much, much more evolved beyond just fighting. I mean, you can fight for sure, but you can also try to compete for, you know, as I said, technological victory, cultural victory. There's a lot of ways to play the game, and different people's strengths help them play in different ways. So, frankly, after talking about it here, I might just go download it and play it again after this. I kind of want to, Chris, I don't know if you do online Civ with other people, but I would love to do a game with you.
Yeah, no, that would be great. And Haley, that is one of the things that's fun about Civ as well, is you can obviously sit at your computer and you can play against bots at home without an internet connection, but you can also play with other folks. You know, as long as you can align 5 hours of scheduling time together, it should work pretty well. But I think Haley, just as an aside, I think one of the other funny things that you would appreciate in the diplomatic space is that you can, as a civilization, you can denounce other civilizations when they have done you wrong, and they can denounce you when you have done something that they find unacceptable or contrary to their interests. So if you've, you know, if you've attacked one of their allies, they may denounce you. And there's a funny thing that happens where your screen, you know, your screen changes and this other civilization pops up with its leader, like, you know, Maria Theresa or something, and they, you know, you'll receive an information box that says that, you know, Austria is denouncing you. They're warning other civilizations that you are not to be trusted. And then you, even in that moment, your response can further shape their behavior, because you're given two options to respond to their denunciation of you. And one is you can say, you'll pay for this in time. And the other is you can say, very well, like, you can just totally take it lying down. and I think there are all kinds of other little details like that, Haley, that I think you would get a kick out of.
I would enjoy denouncing others. That does sound fun to me.
So, Haley, would you play my Star Wars Civilization game?
I would. I think the biggest sell there, Eric, even though I don't want to spend so much time on a screen, I would like to explore this, like, pre-history of Star Wars. I think it's fun to offer people, the masses, the option to dream of new worlds and things that are lost to the mists of time.
All right, well, Disney, if you're listening, we've given you several good ideas here for new games that would make you a lot of money, so just call us. We'll be happy to consult with you on any of these games. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on Hoth Takes.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
And if you want to share your thoughts about our episode here or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on X and Blue Sky. We've got links to our social media profiles in the show notes. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. And as always, for legal purposes, we should note that all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And hey, if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. We will see you next time. May the Force be with you.